I'm Rhonda. I actually grew up in this area, about 30 miles north of here in Emmett. And my parents, after they sold the house that I grew up in and moved over here last fall, so very interesting. So I came to NNC, went to NTAS, that's where I met Errol, and we married and moved to Trinidad, which is his home country. And we were there for 10 years, teaching in the Bible College, pastoring a small East Indian church in an East Indian village in central Trinidad. And then after 10 years there, we spent 4 years in Manchester, England. I went there, did some more studies, pastored a church, did some part-time teaching at the college there, Nazarene Theological College, Manchester. Our daughter Kimberly was born there at the point at which we had kind of given up that we were going to have children. And so when she was about 11 months old, I took a position here with NNU. We moved back, so I've been here since 2004, so 12 years back here. And very nice to be back around family, raising our daughter. That's been very good. What we enjoy doing as a family is camping and fishing, particularly. So next week we're going to take a few days, and then in August again take some more time. I'm a happy generalist or utility infielder here in the religion department. Teach a little bit of everything. Currently, I'm teaching some church history, some spiritual formation, some intro to Christian missions, directing the online course of study. And my husband and I co-teach our Sunday school class, and we have, oh man, I'll bet we have done that for 10 years. So, yeah, we're at Nampa First. Yeah. So, that's me. And I usually go around and say, you know, where are you from? What are you doing? Here's what I am going to make you do, though. Here, I'll pause. I don't know. What do you really enjoy doing, even if you don't often get to do it or take time to do it?
You're talking leisure or ministry?
Leisure.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just fun, pure joy.
For me, it's being outside. Anything outside.
Good. Yeah.
Wow. I love to read, whether that's outside or inside. I confess this yesterday, will lose sleep reading. Mm-hmm. I like suspense thrillers, and I like figuring out who did it. But that is.
So you don't read the final chapter before you? Not usually.
Occasionally, if it's, I'm like, oh, but most of the time, no.
Okay.
So I want to be surprised. If I could, if I had the means and I had the time off, I would travel. I had an opportunity to be short-term mission trip with Youth and Missions. I was in Western Samoa and absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I've told my husband if God ever, I've always felt a call to missions, and obviously that's being fulfilled in our ministry. But if we could take our family with us, but even that aside, I think I could live almost anywhere.
Yeah, good.
And have been to Spain on a work and women's trip. Like I said, I lived in the Samoan culture for a summer. But traveling is, I love people groups and I like different cultures.
Good.
We did a cruise last June, and it was, I would do a cruise, you get away, mm-hmm. and you're pampered, which is nice, but your cell phone is off.
Yeah.
To be somewhere where you don't have cell service or can't because it's too expensive.
Yeah. Did you participate in the National Day of Unplugging in April?
I didn't even know about it.
I didn't either. But there was a National Unplug Day in April. I have a feeling we'll see more of those. Just to kind of start thinking more about Sabbath, so what do you think of when you think of Sabbath?
I think of spiritual rest and renewal.
Okay.
I think about that now, but when I first spiritual disciplines and I'm thinking Sabbath, I think Sunday. I think Sunday's a day of rest. Well, it's not a
right.
Special
thing. Right.
But growing up, Sabbath was We weren't allowed to watch TV during the afternoon. We couldn't play football. You know, no couldn't do anything like
that. So newspaper, up, yeah.
Sabbath was.
So here's one of my favorite stories about how the concept of Sabbath kind of evolved in Western society. Pastoring in England, I got all kinds of wonderful perspectives. And there's this particular strain of Scottish Presbyterianism called the Islands and the Highlands, because they have a lot of, well, the Outer Hebrides and all these islands along the outer coast of Scotland, and very staunch Presbyterian, back to John Knox and all of that. And a lot of the islands, you know, people live and, you know, farm or whatever in the islands, but the parish church is on another island. So to get to church on Sunday, you had to take a boat. So your options are rowboat and sailboat. What do you take?
Well, if it's Sabbath and you're not supposed to work too hard, you take the sailboat.
Take the sailboat.
You have to look at the sailboat.
Well, actually, here's the response from the clergy and the rationale. The sailboat is obviously less work, but it's also more pleasurable. Therefore, you must take the rowboat. And I think I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and even then, of course, a lot of other dynamics going on in this area at that time. Church split with some more fundamentalist sects and everything, and our family was kind of caught in the middle of that. So I remember, you know, we don't watch television, we don't take the Sunday paper, no sports, heavens. So all this kind of stuff. So somehow pleasure got taken out of Sabbath as well. It's not simply a matter of what we don't do. We don't have any fun either.
Yes.
And one of the guys in my earlier one said, I had to take a nap whether I wanted to or not.
Right.
So, I mean, we have really distorted, and part of it, you know, our Protestant work ethic and all of that. And we have to recognize that Sabbath, we don't keep Sabbath. We observe the Lord's Day. Sabbath for the Jewish community was not a worship service time per se, but it was a time of celebration, and there were some other things. And so what I'm doing in this workshop is not so much a how to observe Sabbath as much as why. I mean, it has been called the Jewish gift to the rest of the world. And I think we need to recognize that there are only a few groups, Christian groups, that are Sabbatarian, that is, observe a seventh-day Sabbath. We observe the Lord's Day, honor of the Lord's resurrection, but I think we also need to be very serious about Sabbath keeping within a context. And why do you think it's important that we observe a Sabbath?
Well, I know what I think the answer is now.
Okay.
I didn't think about it till my coursework, honestly. The Lord created, but on the seventh day he rested. And so he set an example for us to follow.
Okay.
I mean,
we could pretty much stop there, but we won't. But you're right. I think it surprises some people. I think it did me as I got more and more into this whole idea. And I've been kind of wrestling with this idea of Sabbath for about 6 years. It's really been kind of growing on me. So here's Genesis chapter 2, verse 2. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Actually, he rested. He stopped. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. The first thing in Scripture that we are told is made holy is the seventh day. And just that holy time. The Jews have a saying about Sabbath, a description. It is a sanctuary in time. Oh, I like that too. a sanctuary in time. And that image, we could really run with that image. Why else? Why observe Sabbath? And here's where I say, don't over-spiritualize this.
We just need rest.
Okay, how so?
I was tired when I got here.
Okay.
I'm more tired being here.
Okay.
I love it. But as people have been telling me, especially the last couple of days, when we're not rested, we really can't give our best.
Yeah.
And that is physically...
Physiologically, our bodies, our minds, our whole beings, we require it. I don't plant tomatoes in the same spot in the garden every year. And in fact, at some point, I need to not plant anything at all there. And so why observe it? Why do we not observe Sabbath?
Overscheduled.
Guilt about what?
About not working or ministering. That's from between I need to put between.
Not working, not ministering. Let's just use a word that our entire society would understand. Not producing. And as what Ed talked about this morning in his devotional, what do you have to show for yourself? What do you have to show for your day? What do you have to show for your time? And if, you know, you're like me, down from my, my parents, my grandparents, all of that, get your work done, and then you can play. When is my work done? But... For humankind, at least, what's the prior command? The command for Sabbath precedes the command for work, which is really interesting. I have to be careful about rabbit trails, so when you see me kind of do this, I'm pulling myself back in, okay? So, not producing, I think that's a big one. If I don't have something to show for myself, then... I'm not producing. I'm guilt-ridden. Why else?
Well, this isn't else, but it's a piggyback for me. You know, we mentioned vacation. My family growing up, we took one vacation together. It was 1972.
Oh, wow.
I was 7 years old. We piled into a car and drove from Ohio to Texas. My crayons melted in the back window because it was so hot. We went to visit family friends and stayed with them. Some were in town, Lubbock and San Antonio, and we stayed out on a ranch. But as a family all together, that is the only family vacation we ever took.
Wow.
Now, there were a couple times my mom and my brothers and I went to the ocean with my grandparents, and my dad and I went to Florida to visit my uncle, his one and only brother. But I can tell you part of my guilt. My mom always worked, and my parents had a rough relationship until later in their marriage. But my mom was a Christian, my dad wasn't, so their idea of fun and entertainment were different. But I will tell you that I think part of my comes from growing up in that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brian's family, it was a vacation, even if it was a car or camping or fishing, right, or whatever. That was a whole new concept for me when I,
right,
was married. And,
right,
and I could hear my mom going, well, you really should work. Just take the money for your vacation pay. Mm-hmm. So I would say part of that is going to be, obviously, conditioning, yeah, and tradition.
Yeah. No, very true. I'm going to recommend some resources. Recommend to explore as you will. Doesn't mean I endorse everything, but certainly I recommend them. Sabbath is Resistance, Walter Brueggemann. Absolutely a must read as far as I'm concerned. It is kind of Old Testament theology, but it is very accessible. And his, the subtitle, Saying No to a Culture of Now, I have got to read this, and I completely forgot to read it in any previous session, so go out and share the word. Multitasking is the drive to be more than we are, to control more than we do, to extend our power and our effectiveness. Such practice yields a divided self with full attention given to nothing. And that is but one of the gems in this book. Walter Brueggemann, Brueggemann, Old Testament scholar, retired but still living from the Lutheran tradition, but there are many ways in which he thinks like a Wesleyan. Challenge your thinking about understanding the Exodus and Israel's command to Sabbath. Outstanding. Walter Mueller, Sabbath, Finding Rest, Renewal, and Delight in Our Busy Lives. Again, he has done a lot in the social work arena, ministry as well. He does extend his thinking and you know, suggestions of practice beyond the Christian tradition, which might make some people uncomfortable, but I think you probably, you know, you read it with that in mind. But here is a gem right from the beginning. If we do not allow for a rhythm of rest in our overly busy lives, illness becomes our Sabbath. Our pneumonia, our cancer, our heart attack, our accidents create Sabbath for us. I don't have time, nor do I have the expertise. I know enough to be dangerous, I guess. But medical and neurological science will absolutely say how essential this rhythm of rest is. And we make the mistake of thinking that rest is inactivity. Dormancy. Lying fallow. I mean, these are useful things. I had another quote I wanted. I can't find it. But rest, Sabbath, is a spiritual discipline. And it may well be one of the most difficult, because in our society, we're conditioned to be productive. And if we don't have something to show for it, then, oh no, what do people think of me? What do they, you know, what do I think of myself? And great illustration, just last week, I took my daughter to the rec center with me. She spent 40 minutes on an elliptical machine. I couldn't believe it to begin with, but she spent 40, she's 12 going on 13, spent 40 minutes on this elliptical machine, and when she came off of it, she was just like, whoa, I can't walk straight, what am I going to do, you know? And I thought, that is the picture, because there is also a phenomenon that medical people and many people notice it, but they don't think about it. Sabbath illness, Sabbath sickness. People stop and they feel lousy. They feel sluggish, they feel and then what happens? The mind starts going. And we start thinking about all we're not doing, and we just feel lousy, so we quit. Instead of kind of sitting with it and working through it and then establishing the rhythm. So some people try it, they feel lousy, I can't do that, it makes me feel awful, but they haven't really tried it. So your body's not used to it, your mind's not used to it. To what end have you done it? So, I put this, it's a lifeline for leadership, but in reality, Sabbath is a lifeline. There are medical, physical, psychological, neurological reasons why we absolutely need it. We are not created to go at the pace of life at which we are now going. And I think in the last 20 years, research on Sabbath among Christians, the study, the emphasis, Protestants, Catholics, even a resurgence within Jewish tradition on among secular Jews or those who haven't been truly Orthodox. We want it. We are so tired. What do we hear? How you doing? Oh, busy. I'm trying not to say that. Okay. I am trying not to say that. Okay, so this from Matthew Sleeth, who is a medical doctor. He spent most of his career in emergency medicine, much like Dan Spade. But now he has this organization 24-6. And I'll give you a worksheet by the end of the session. But this way, we're not meant to save the Sabbath. The Sabbath is meant to save us. The Jews also had a saying. In exile, it was not the Jews who kept the Sabbath. It was the Sabbath who kept the Jews, which kept the Jews. It became a core identity issue. And it is so countercultural today that I think if we as Christians would recapture the practice of Sabbath, we would make a powerful identity statement. Mm-hmm. And this is where I love Brueggemann, because his whole concept was, and I'm getting way ahead of myself and I'm going all over the place, but it's basically this first concept. You know, how do we think about Sabbath time? Do we think about it as an add-on to the end of a busy week, a pause before we resume our, you know, breakneck speed, and or as in Jewish tradition, do we regard it as an observance that we work toward? It is really at the core of Orthodox Jewish identity. I was very privileged to be in Israel a couple years ago on a travel travel trip, and Shabbat, Sabbath Eve, all the family, everybody comes home, Sabbath meal, every Friday evening, Sabbath meal, on into Sabbath day. I mean, it's at the core of their identity. I think, yeah, we have something to learn. This one, I'll just put this up here, I can share it more fully later, but just to show the breadth of Sabbaths in Scripture, it's not always this weekly 24-hour period. Yes, there is that, but the Sabbath of Pentecost actually went 48 hours because it followed a Sabbath day. The Day of Atonement, 10th day of the 7th month, it was a 24-hour period. And basically grounded in some good theology, and that's more what we're going to unpack. During the Festival of Tabernacles, there were two Sabbaths. Then the Sabbath year. Exile in Babylon is referred to a Sabbath of Sabbaths. This is a very interesting one. In 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verse 21, this is after recounting the fall of Jerusalem and it's all over, and Nebuchadnezzar carries away exiles into Babylon who escaped the sword. The land enjoyed its Sabbath rests, plural. All the time of its desolation, it rested until the 70 years were complete in fulfillment of the word the Lord spoke by Jeremiah. And in Jeremiah 17, from verses 19 on, basically it's a recounting. God, Jeremiah is telling the people, God gave the command, God brought you out of Egypt, God gave the command to Sabbath, but they did not listen or pay attention. They were stiff-necked, would not listen or respond. Down to verse 27. And coming around, you know, God has said, I will bless you with all these blessings, but if you do not obey me to keep the Sabbath day holy by not carrying any load, this is about commerce. He's saying, you continue to do commerce, and it's about the money, it's about the productivity. You continue to do that. If you continue to do that, I will bring judgment on Jerusalem. So that's the word he's talking about. Chronology can be a little messy in the Old Testament, but there is a possibility that if we take from the time of the entering into the Promised Land until the time of exile, and you added up all of those Sabbath years, there were 70 years of Sabbath years that were not observed. And God basically says, you haven't given the land rest. I'm going to give the land rest. Now, there are a lot of other things going on. So the illness becomes your Sabbath, if you will. One writer, I love this phrase, just because the land and the cattle cannot hire a lawyer does not mean they have not been violated. Mm-hmm. So Sabbath, because it's grounded in creation as well, it has implications for everything and everyone. And this seems to bear that out. And then, of course, the Jubilee, after seven Sabbath years, a Jubilee Sabbath of Sabbaths, where all of the people among Israel who had put themselves under indentured servanthood, basically to ensure that there is no ongoing, continuous, poor class within Israel. We know that didn't happen either. And then Hebrews talks about this whole concept of the Sabbath rest for the people of God. So I'm kind of drawing from all of these to talk about why observe Sabbath, recognizing there's an awful lot more. So what do you do when you pull into a rest area? What's the first thing you need to do? Not that. What do you have to do before that? What do you have to do before that, I hope? Stop. You have to stop. And really, this is what Sabbath means. Stop. Cease. And rest. So it is about resting, but we don't rest, really, unless we stop first. So this is really about stopping. There's a Jewish organization. It's a kind of a secular, but it's a nonprofit, started in 2010, that is encouraging all Jews to unplug on the Sabbath. It's called Reboot. Talked about that too. So no devices whatsoever, just stop. And isn't this one of the most powerful little slave drivers that we have invented yet? Okay? So there is very clearly a principle that we must stop. Here's the quote I was looking for earlier. A little article I found about slacking off in the call to Sabbath. She's got a daughter now. She says she herself is a radical at heart, grew up child of Quaker missionaries, and so it was always work, 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 always involved, teaching from, you know, in church from the time she was young. She said, "My daughter, like me, will someday be susceptible to the well-meaning rhetoric of the new radicals and other Christian leaders who call us to do more, sacrifice, give more. Their call is justified. But for overzealous college students, overworked clergy, and even those of us with mediocre service records, the call to ministry should be balanced by a counter call to the spiritual discipline of rest." This is hard, but this is so necessary. So we are called to stop. Now, grounding some scripture here, God ceased from his work. We know Genesis 2, 2 and 3. And then during the Exodus, the giving of the Ten Commandments, why is it that we think we're supposed to obey the Ten Commandments minus this one? Of course, our economy in the United States would collapse if we took seriously the Tenth Commandment, which is do not covet. But be that as it may, we seem to have excised number four. And somehow we've made this more of a Jewish thing than anything else. Maybe that's just me. But here's the fourth commandment. "On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the aliens within your gate." So what are the implications of that? Not you, not your family, not your employees, not your animals, not the strangers or the immigrants, or this is what Bruman and others would agree with this. Sabbath is a moment of radical social equality. in which master and slave, father and son and daughter, livestock and oxen are all equal because none is performing, none is proving anything. Sabbath is a sabbatical from the rough and tumble world of production, from the competitive leverage of consumption, because all the non-productive and the non-entitled are to rest and be treated as a neighbor just as you are. And he makes this case that if we don't observe Sabbath, we get caught up in viewing the other either as a competitor, a rival. What was the other word he used? Anyway, it breeds competition, which breeds violence, which is not neighborliness. So, stop in the name of love of God, of other, of self, and of all of God's creation. Stop, cease, rest, be refreshed, and all the re's we're talking about here. It's not going to happen without Sabbath. And I think we see humans have always been violent when we feel threatened, when we feel that someone or something else is infringing upon what is ours. But am I wrong? Have we not seen an increase in violence? Road rage. I mean, is not road rage? Yeah. Anyway, enough said about that. So, second principle. First principle of Sabbath is cease and rest. Be refreshed. The second is trust. Within the context, a couple of things that Sabbath calls us to do. When we are not producing, when in the Sabbath year, I cannot reap, I cannot sow, I can't plant crops for the next year. What are the implications for that? That means I've got 2 years. We forget, I think, Israel lived in a subsistent culture. If they didn't plant it this year, chances were very good somebody was going to starve to death next year. So for me not to plant and to simply reap what the land offers. Really, God? Is it any wonder why it doesn't seem that they observed Sabbath year? Well, what does Haggai talk about? Haggai says, you've come back from exile. You laid the foundation of the temple, but then you got caught up in what? Producing. I've got to get my crops in. I've got to get my house up. I've got to do this. The temple, that'll wait. I've got to feed my family. I've got to shelter my family. He said, your crops continue to deteriorate. Nothing is coming of it. Why? Because you haven't put first things first. You are not honoring God. And so, this. Why should they trust God to provide? Oh, maybe there's that matter of 40 years in the wilderness where you had food, you had meat, you had bread, you had water, your clothes didn't wear out, your shoes didn't wear out. So, trust God to provide. And I think for many of us, because we have been conditioned to produce, but also we have guilt about not producing, and we think people will think poorly of us, or will think poorly about ourselves, is that trusting God? And here, I have to always remind people that hear me say that I'm talking to myself here. So this is not pointing any fingers. This is my struggle. This is my challenge. And trust that God is. I like this one. And I hadn't thought of it until I really started reading in this. You may know that the creation narrative that we find in Scripture is most probably written as a counter to the Babylonian creation account, in which basically creation comes to be in this battle of the gods. They get upset at each other. They break out in war against each other. And it's chaotic, and the long and the short of it is that nature is regarded as this scary, chaotic thing that's unpredictable. It's not good, and we got to figure out how to manipulate our way around, and the gods are kind of simply superhuman versions of ourselves. But in this account, human beings are created kind of as playthings of the gods to keep the gods busy so that they won't rebel against those who are in charge. That's kind of the Babylonian version. And yet, in the context of that, Israel says, no. Creation comes about by the intentional action of one God who pronounces it good and who has the audacity to take a day off because he's not worried about some other God coming along and taking his power. And that's the God that we serve. And I have to ask myself, do I act like that's the God I serve half the time? That God can actually stop and rest because there is no threat or rival to his power, to his sovereignty. So this is what Israel is called to remember, particularly within the context of creation. Love that image. Take your hand off the plow. What's the worst case scenario? If you stop, if I stop, what's the worst case scenario? I mean, it might be a worst case scenario is you lose your job. It might be. It might be a worst case scenario of death, I suppose. That would be a really weird word. But we are people of hope. Not that we wish to die, but we are people of hope. But I think more often than not, worst case scenario, maybe I have to do it tomorrow. Maybe it doesn't get done. What a novel idea, you know? So take your hand off the plow. Trust God to provide. Now, in the context of Exodus 31, this one is especially appropriate for ministers, I think. God is giving very particular instructions for the building of the tabernacle. And of course, this is all about how is God to be worshipped properly? Because they come out of a very polytheistic context. It's still the context of the Exodus. They're not sure how to worship this God who is delivering them. And so God is given very special instructions through Moses about the very careful construction of the tabernacle, which will become a symbol of God's presence among the people. And we know that in the midst of that, then, we have the golden calf incident, which is very much not how to worship God. But we come back, and there's a very particular instruction regarding the Sabbath in the context of this very, very important work. Observe the Sabbath while you are doing this. And if you don't observe the Sabbath while you are constructing this special tabernacle that is going to help us worship God properly, you will die. So doing special work for God is no reason to disregard Sabbath. Ministers, hear it. Yeah, myself, hear this. And that honestly has been my biggest challenge. Thinking, well, God called me to this. God, yeah, but the saying, you've heard it, I'd rather burn out than rust out. Well, guess what? You're out. God didn't call us to either. Now, do we work hard? Yes. Came across a phrase, don't even remember which source it was. There is a drastic difference between having drive and being driven. And I think too many of us as ministers and too many of us just in our society are driven rather than simply having drive but knowing when to take our foot off the pedal and hit the brake. Get
out of the car. I really like how Ed said it today in his devotion about giving so that at the end of life I don't have a lot left in this life. Brian, and we've said, I'd rather, you know, burn out than rest.
Right.
Not in the context of what it really means to just, like, kill yourself, but Brian said, that's what I mean, what Ed said.
Yeah.
Giving so that there's just a little, you know, there's something in reserve.
Yeah.
But not a lot.
Right.
Storing up.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good balance.
Yeah.
How he put it today, I like that.
John Wesley actually could have been a very wealthy man. He made a lot of money through his books, his writings, his driving, all that. But he said, if I die with more than a few pounds in my pocket, I will have been a failure at this. And sure enough, he died with, you know, very few, very little money to his name when he died. So I think it's the same principle there. So this is the third principle. Remembrance and calling. Leviticus 25 contains God's designation of Jubilee Sabbath. Now, in Exodus 31, which we just talked about, that was grounded in the creation story. Why do you observe Sabbath? Because on the seventh day, God rested. That's why you need to. God set the example. But here in the Sabbath year, or the Jubilee Sabbath, Sabbath is grounded in the fact that Israel has been delivered by God. It's grounded in the Exodus. You have been set free. So during the consecrated year of Jubilee, the Israelites were reminded that they were a free people due only to the mercy and power of God. And their lives were sustained only by the blessing and provision of God. Therefore, they were to release slaves and free others. Just this morning, I was reading some of these Sabbath passages again. And in Ezekiel chapter 20, of course, they are in exile now. Ezekiel 20:30 or 11. I gave them my decrees, made known to them my laws, through which people will live if they obey. And I gave them my Sabbaths as a sign between us, so that they would know that I am the Lord who made them holy. I made them holy. Yet, goes on about all their disobedience, including they utterly desecrated the Sabbaths. Time and time again, Ezekiel points back, they were disobedient, and he keeps saying, they utterly desecrated my Sabbaths. And you're like, wait a minute, but doesn't this all relate back to what today we would call these issues of social justice? If you are continually desecrating the Sabbath, that has impact on everybody else. The land, the animals, your neighbor. And why do we desecrate the Sabbath? Is it not always related to production? And that book, Brueggemann, back to Brueggemann. So it comes down to the end, 20:20 of Ezekiel, keep my Sabbaths holy, that they may be a sign between us. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. Remember who you are as the people of God. And we go back to Abraham's covenant. God says, Abraham, I will make you the father of many nations. I will bless you. Yay, we're done. Whoops, there's more. I will bless you in order that through you all the nations of the earth might be blessed. What's our calling as the people of God? What is our mission as the people of God? Pastor Kent Conrad at First Church some years ago, we are saved to serve, not to sit. I love that. Saved to serve, not to sit. We have been set free, Paul says. We have been set free. And in Ephesians, he says, we are created as God's workmen or craftsmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works. So Sabbath provides us the sanctuary and time to remember who we are, what God has delivered us from, what God has called us to. We stop. We don't do this very well without stopping. In fact, I don't think we do it at all if we don't stop. When we stop, we trust that it does not all depend on me. And that there is a God who's got this. I don't have to do it. I don't have to fix it. I'm not in charge. God is God, and I am not. And I remember who I am and what God has called me to. We remember why we have been called, why we have been delivered. And yes, it is for our benefit, but it's not only for our benefit. So, kind of to summarize, Sabbath, I cease my feverish efforts to produce as though God's economy is inadequate for my life and situation. Isn't that why we refuse to stop? Now, yeah, we're conditioned. It becomes tradition. It's a habit. But we need to replace some very bad and damaging habits with some healthy habits. I pause, I Sabbath, as I affirm that God is God and I am not. And I trust that God cares for me and those things which concern me. And we haven't even begun to, get to the New Testament passages. You know, Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says, consider the sparrows. Don't. I know that you need these things. Just chill. Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Come to me, you who are heavy, weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Yoke. This isn't a life of ease. This is a recognition that God, it's something that's well suited. It's not a heavy burden. It's not, yeah. And then I celebrate. Celebration is a huge part of Sabbath. And there's some really funny stuff, you know, within Jewish tradition. Matthew Sleeth, for example, his wife was raised Jewish and I suppose in some ways would still consider herself Jewish. And, you know, she just basically boiled it down. Okay, don't work on Sabbath. Well, what is work? And that's why we get into all the rules. Well, figure out what work is for you and don't do it. Okay? But making love on Sabbath was a big Jewish thing, you know? You get brownie points for doing that. And Matthew Sleeth says, I actually wish my wife had been raised Orthodox Jew, because Orthodox Jew says, but if you do it twice on Sabbath, even more so. But anyway, spoken like a true man, I suppose. Anyway, I wouldn't have said that if it had been raised. Anyway, you might want to edit that off the tape there, please. Okay, so I celebrate, and feasting is a big part of it. Statistics have shown that as people in America have disregarded Sunday observance even, Lord's Day observance, we visit people less. We don't get together. And our current pastor at Nampa First, he's got... Boy, this is true. You know, Jesus invited more people to dinner than he did to church. Actually, he invited himself to dinner a lot, but hey, that works too. So, celebration. We celebrate that we have been delivered to take our place among the people of God in order to be salt, light, and agents of reconciliation. So, here's this little worksheet by Matthew Sleeth, and the website is listed there at the bottom, www.sabbathliving.org. And he's doing a lot of work now with Sabbath observance and rest and healthy rhythms of life. But I intend to work on this, first with my family, and then hopefully to get a group of students who are willing to take this experience. I don't want to call it an experiment, although that may be what it is. But a Sabbath experience. Let's try to do Sabbath together. Because the reality is, in the society in which we live, few, if any of us, are going to be able to do this by ourselves. We need to do it within a community. And I think that community can be a family unit. Maybe a Sunday school class. Maybe we just voluntarily ask persons... who would like to engage in this, who would like to try to take Sabbath seriously. And there are just scads of medical and neurological research and all of that, but there are some really good theological truths as well for why we need Sabbath. And I'd rather approach it holistically. We need this. And I would love to start training kids coming out of college. Look, you may not think you need this now, but if you establish this pattern, I had a pastor in my last, he said, I regret it took me most of my ministry before I figured this out. And at significant cost to his family. So I just offer this for what it's worth. The website there has some really good resources. I've only begun to poke around it, but I think that's just a really good starting point for how can I take this seriously? How can I actually have a plan? And we're not going to do it without a plan. Maybe you will. I won't do it without a plan. So comments, rebuttals, questions.
And I, you know, it's funny, I, in the two small groups that I lead, you know, obviously in church and when I'm preaching, you know, I obviously talk about the need for fellowship and corporate worship and making that a priority, which obviously we do.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes me, you know, I don't talk about Sabbath a lot, although in my small group I have, so that they help hold me accountable mm-hmm. for figuring.
Right.
Even as I haven't fully engaged that. I mean, I'm doing moments. I'm better.
Good.
I
mean, yeah.
But they'll go, well, have you figured out the Sabbath? What are you doing? And I wonder, do I think that by not taking a Sabbath, because my ladies will go, boy, I just don't know how you do it with your schedule. I don't know how, you know, Brian is obviously my partner in this, and we, you know, we minister together, we pick up the house together, we, you know,
yeah.
people in our home together. Sometimes he doesn't know how many are showing up, because I've
right.
just invited God and country, but we, you know, we do that together. We do have dinner, you know, family dinner, but I wonder how much trust I have that if I do find a night off in the week and I tell one of my groups, you know what, I can't do this and I don't have another night. Would one of you want to pick this up and leave?
Right.
I wonder if I'm not trusting God to put something, and I don't want to think I have a Messiah complex, but I mean, I've been, one of my groups, we've been meeting now for
yeah.
almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Why can't I say, hey, you know what, guys, I'm going to step out of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, Leslie's going to become leader
right.
of this group. Why haven't I, you know, and maybe it comes back to, I love my groups. I love women.
Yeah.
I love discipleship. But I could be more effective
mm-hmm.
if
yeah.
I had that Sabbath. But I honestly, until you were talking about this, I never equated trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really don't trust God enough to.
Yeah. I have worked over the past year with a pastor in another city, and she has very deliberately said, I don't need to be out more than two, maximum of three nights a week. And so she has very deliberately, she's not out every night. And in fact, more nights than not, she's not. The Jews have a saying, and I'll paraphrase it. If Sabbath is observed fully, just once, Messiah will come. And I think that both presents to us the reality of how challenging it is to fully embrace and observe Sabbath. And, you know, we don't want to be legalistic. I tell my online students right up front, I will not be online, checking email, doing anything on Sundays unless I have a donkey in the ditch. And donkeys get into ditches. And sometimes we have to get the donkey out of the ditch. But for the most part, how we order our another saying, if we observe Sabbath, it will affect how we live the other 6 days of the week. So, I continue to work on it, invite you to the journey, and, you know, do it in community.